two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hope in Darkness is a podcast that addresses sensitive topics, including torture, abuse, and human rights violations. Listener discretion is advised. By spring of 2018, Josh and Tammy got to spend more time together, thanks to the efforts of shipping tycoon Wilmer Ruperti.
Because the commissioner gave instructions to his subordinates, to the guards, that we had permission to have a full visit. We had privileges. I only had to call guard, Sabine, and they opened the lock like I was the queen of the cell. I only had to say, look, I have to leave, and they'd let me leave for my visit.
Josh moved again to a new cell within the political prisoners part of El Helicoide, one he would get to stay in all by himself.
It was recently painted. There are no cockroaches. It actually had an AC unit in it. Yeah, it was pretty awesome, I'm not gonna lie.
One night in May 2018, Tammy came to visit and was allowed to stay overnight in Josh's new cell.
You know, we, at this point, we're almost at 2 years. And so we're friends with quite a few of the guards, and they weren't as worried about us anymore.
The next day was going to be a visitation day. Unlike American prisons, where inmates go to a specific room to meet with family members or even chat behind glass using a phone, visitation days at El Helicoide were a free-for-all. Prisoners brought their own tables and chairs out into the hallway and set up to spend time with their visitors there. This morning, however, was different. The doors to the cells were open, but before any visitors could come in...
I remember waking up to loud bangs and smashes.
Within just a short period of time, his situation would go from greatly improved to life-threatening.
They're saying that they want to kill me. They're saying that they want me as their guarantee.
I know that he is afraid for his life right now.
Please, I beg of you, with all of my heart, don't allow us to suffer more.
I'm Becky Bruce, and this is Hope in Darkness, Episode 11, Prison Riot. More after this. Josh says the prison uprising in 2018 started over, of all things, Wi-Fi. We've talked before about the divide between the political prisoners at El Helicoide and the common prisoners, people who were in jail not because of their disagreement with the government, but, for lack of any better terminology, what we'll call ordinary crimes.
Los presos comunes son tratados como animales.
The common prisoners are treated like animals. They are beaten, they are mistreated. They are not treated as people. Their rights are totally violated.
Political prisoners had more privileges. Even the strange architecture of El Helicoide reflected the hierarchy. As we mentioned, the hallway of the prison is long and sloping. Common prisoners crowded into rooms mostly near the bottom of the ramp. Political prisoners got more room and relative freedom a little higher up. A locked gate separated the two areas. The disparity caused a lot of tension. In May 2018, that came to a head. A few days before Tammy spent the night in Josh's room, a political prisoner named Gregory claimed his Wi-Fi device had been stolen.
And so from that point on, for the next couple days, he was fighting with a lot of people, and he was saying a lot of bad things.
Gregory eventually went after one common prisoner.
One of his cellmates, and he started saying that he was the one that stole his Wi-Fi. And that cellmate happened to have a brother and some cousins that lived at the bottom part of the jail. There were upwards of 3-4 people that would actually run that cell and tell people what to do, where to do it. And two of those people that were leaders in that cell happened to be connected to this one person that Gregory was getting it into.
The disagreements simmered until visitation day. The gate between the common and political prisoners was open, so all of them could move freely into the hallway. It also gave the common prisoners access to areas they couldn't always reach, such as a room with free weights in the political prisoners' side that the inmates used as a gym.
While the common prisoners were transitioning from where they stayed all the way up to the very end where the gym is, Gregory was up there trying to buy cigarettes. And since their door was open, they had free roam to the rest of the prison. There was 8 of them. They snuck themselves up to the very top as if they were just going to where they were supposed to go. Gregory didn't realize that they were there, and they ended up grabbing Gregory and throwing him in between 2 locked cell doors so that no one could come in and no one could go out. They had one person holding the door so that Gregory was stuck. And from that point on, the other 7 people didn't hold back. And Gregory came out of that very, very hurt.
Gabriel Valles, the political prisoner and human rights activist we met in a previous episode, shared video on Instagram documenting Gregory's injuries, as another prisoner narrated. Gabo believes the guards set Gregory up for that beating, that they staged the scene and laid a trap for him.
Desfigurado su rostro dentro de esta cárcel, un joven que no ha tenido juicio, secuestrado por el gobierno de Nicolás Maduro. Aquí están las consecuencias.
One eye was swollen shut, and half of his face was purple with bruising.
When we came out, hearing the commotion of everything that was just going on, we saw Gregory for the first time, and we were shocked. We were shocked at what we were seeing. And that's why all these political prisoners started to get very angry.
Que todo el mundo sepa que aquí no hay armas. La mayoría de todos estos jóvenes que están secuestrados aquí.
Unrest was nothing new at El Alicoide. Periodically, the political prisoners would protest, refuse to go back to their cells, for example, or stage a hunger strike.
And what the reaction of that would be from the guards would be to lock the 2 gates up front and then lock the gate up top before you get to basically where their offices are. And so they would basically contain this group of angry political prisoners, and they would allow them to simmer down as long as it would take.
About 12 hours in some cases, but no longer. However, this time, the inmates refused to settle down.
A los otros presos políticos enterarse que un preso político fue golpeado, eso estalló.
When the other political prisoners found out that a political prisoner had been beaten up, everything exploded. It put the common prisoners at odds with the political prisoners, and it was a disaster. There was an uproar because the political prisoners said that the police allowed this to happen, that we're not taken care of, that we're not protected.
Que no estábamos bien protegidos.
They weren't getting their their human rights that they were allowed. They weren't getting their due process. They weren't allowed to go to the doctor.
¿Cuáles eran estos derechos que ellos exigían?
What rights did they want? To be taken to the hospital? Because they wouldn't take you to the hospital. You had to pay to go to the hospital. To be taken to court? You had to pay to get a ticket that you said you needed to be taken to court at this day, at this time. You had to pay for everything. So they wanted to reduce the corruption.
Entonces, ellos querían que disminuyera la corrupción.
There was a handful of things, and every single person had their own problems. So it was finally the last straw.
It was the last straw for Josh and Tammy, too. In the past, they had stayed out of these disruptions because they didn't want to ruin their own chance at freedom. But this time, they talked it over and decided maybe they should get involved.
I remember pulling her into the room and talking to her, and I told her, maybe we have to show that we're willing to do something to get out of there, for something to actually happen. And she agreed with me. We were scared, we were nervous, we didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but we decided it was time for us to fight for our rights. And so I went to Gabo and Laurent.
Gabo and Laurent were human rights activists and Josh's friends, whose videos documenting the riot are largely how the world learned about the uprising. Josh told them he wanted to make sure their efforts weren't in vain like they'd been in the past. They had to mean something.
And I don't want this to be like all of the other uprisings, to where we fight, we scream, we yell, we cry, and we plead for whatever it is that we want. And at the end of the day, we end up just going into ourselves and nothing comes out of it. And they all agreed with me. They said, okay, yeah, we'll do it.
A prison official scolded Josh for putting himself in the middle of the dispute, but Josh wouldn't be deterred.
And from there, we started arguing more and more with the warden, but nothing was happening. And so he said, you know what? If you're not going to listen to me, we're going to get everyone out of their cells. And now I'm thinking, wow, this can't be happening. Like, holy cow. Hopefully we'll get something out of this. And as we all started running up to the very top, we got to the point to where the common prisoners could see us from the gym. But what they didn't know was what just happened. They didn't know that we were upset with the people in the jail, the officers, and the way that they were treating us. They thought that we were coming to them to fight them because of what happened to Gregory. So they started breaking through their door to come at us to fight us. And I remember we were all held up our hands into a circle to say, no, we're together. And when they came out of that cell and came towards us and we collided with them, it was just this crazy feeling of everyone was just ready to let all their frustrations go. I didn't realize what we had done until we started going back and everyone started breaking doors, breaking glasses, breaking the computers, popping all the light bulbs. At this point, I started to get afraid. I started thinking, okay, what did we just do? Before we went up top to break the rest of these people out, I had put my wife into my room. I told her, don't leave. Well, when I'm coming down with this group of people, as everyone's just running down to the bottom part of the prison, someone turns around a corner to where my cell is and pops this light bulb. And there's my wife just screaming, holding her hands over her head as all of this glass is now falling on top of her. And I go up to her, I said, what are you doing? I put you inside my cell and I told you not to leave. She said, I know, but I had to go get other people. And she wanted her friends to be with her. So now I have my wife and two other women in my cell, and there I am. and everyone's freaking out.
Josh went out and grabbed another political prisoner friend, Cappy, so nicknamed because he was a captain in the military.
I brought Cappy in with us, and we pushed my bunk bed up against the door. The adrenaline was just pumping. We didn't know what was coming up. We knew that this was crazy and had gotten out of hand already, but we didn't know what was coming.
Todos empezaron a atacar a Joshua.
Everyone began attacking Joshua.
They came to my door and they started screaming for me to come out. And these were just common prisoners.
Porque decían que Joshua era la garantía.
Because they said that he was the guarantee. And what did he guarantee? That the police wouldn't come in. They threatened the officer, saying, if you come in here, into the cell or into the jail, we'll get them and kill Joshua.
And the next thing I know, they're saying if I don't come out now, that they're going to come in and that they were going to kill me.
Y esa es la parte en la que...
This is the part where Josh made videos saying, Mom, they're going to kill me. This is crazy. I want my family to know that I love them. Things like that.
This place, I've been begging my government for 2 years. They say they're doing things, but I'm still here. And now my life is threatened. How long do I have to suffer here? How long do my kids have to go asking for their mommy and daddy?
I don't think I'd ever been this afraid in my life. It's completely different than at the very beginning when, you know, I was up against a wall and I had cops behind me pointing their guns at me. Because that lasted, you know, 20 seconds. This was a constant screaming, yelling, pounding for more than an hour.
Empezaron a golpear las puertas.
They started beating on the doors to the point that they made a huge hole in the wall.
A hole the size of a basketball. And they did that with just this little hand weight, pounding it on this brick in order to basically break out the lock on my door to break it open and to get in.
Porque ellos tocaban y golpeaban.
They pounded on the door so hard that I'd ask, what do you need? What do you want? Then bravely, even though I was afraid, I confronted them and said,
tú no te vas a llevar a Joshua. Vas a dejar a Joshua en paz. No las moleste. Ve y busca otra cosa que hacer.
You're not taking Joshua. Leave Joshua in peace. Don't bother him. Go find something else to do.
Error mío, porque eso los enojaba más.
That was a mistake because they got angrier. The prisoners wanted to grab me so that Josh would give himself up. Because they said if they got me, Joshua would easily give up because I was his wife, the only thing he had in prison. And he'd say, okay, take me, leave her alone.
The attempts to break into Josh's cell failed. In fact, all they succeeded in doing was barricading the Holtz and their friends inside because they bent the metal frame of the door so it could no longer open.
I remember them just screaming as they were pounding that wall, telling me that they were going to kill me, that they were going to throw my blood all over the walls. They wanted me, they wanted to hurt me, and they wanted to show the police that they had me. In their minds, if they had this beaten up American that was bleeding with a knife to my throat, they could get their freedom. All they had to do was take me outside and show them what they had done to me.
The Holtz found themselves trapped in a windowless cell as the chaos continued in the hallway outside. More after the break.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lori Holt was at work when she first heard about the riot.
She had her boss that just found her in the hallway just screaming and crying, and her boss came up. She says, "What's going on? What's going on?" And she couldn't really talk, but she finally got it out, saying that Josh is in danger. They're going to kill him. So now her boss has my mom's phone in her hand, and she's calling all of these people. She's calling Senator Hatch. She's calling the mayor. She's calling every single contact that my mom had, and no one's answering their phone, which is making the worse, even making the situation even harder for my mom. Finally, she dialed one last number. It was Mia Love's number.
The former congresswoman from Utah's 4th District immediately knew the situation was dire. She did her best to calm Lori while also reaching out to other players behind the scenes.
So Mia hung up the phone and started calling all of her contacts. And from what she told me, she got a hold of everyone that she could get a hold of in the government to let them know so that they were aware of the situation that was going on.
Senator Orrin Hatch also started making phone calls.
We are doing everything possible to remove him from this dangerous situation. I want the Holt family and all Utahns to know that I'm making every possible phone call, pulling every possible lever, and leaving no stone unturned for Josh.
Lori got in touch with the local media, trying to spread the word about her son's situation.
I need help.
Holt's son, Josh, posted this distress call from L.A. Koide to Facebook.
People have taken the entire prison.
I can't say that he's okay. I don't know.
They're saying that they want to kill me. They're saying that they want me as their guarantee.
If I could change places with him, I would. If I could go there, I would.
Josh didn't know, couldn't know, how many people were working on his and Tammy's behalf.
And I realize now that it probably wasn't the best decision to call my mom. I probably should have called my dad. But I was a mama's boy. You know, I always, if there was any problems that I had in my life, I always called my mom. I wanted her, and I felt that she was the person that could protect me and save me in that situation.
But in that moment, trapped in his cell with a mob of angry prisoners outside, no one back in the United States could really do anything. But someone else could.
Luckily, I had made friends. And those friends came to save me.
One of those friends was Columbia, Josh's roommate from early in his stay at El Helicoide. Columbia had been controversially charged with the murder of a rising superstar in Nicolas Maduro's political party. The regime painted victim Robert Serra as a martyr for the revolution. Therefore, Columbia occupied a unique place in the jail. He was serving time for a common crime, but one with a potentially political motive.
Este muchacho es detenido con
this guy was detained with 14 other people. He was the leader. He became Josh's friend because Josh had been in a cell with him. And this man protected Josh in the middle of the riot because of their friendship.
Este hombre protegiera a Josh en medio de ese motín. Él fue uno de los que dijo, si alguien toca al gringo, está tocándome a mí. Lo que él decía era ley.
He said, if anybody touches the gringo, they're going after me. What he said was law.
Columbia's intervention helped calm the tensions and also built a bridge between the two factions of prisoners. They stopped fighting with each other and united in a common cause, the fight for human rights. Because Josh and Tammy were now willing to get involved, the prisoners decided to use them as leverage.
Entonces, gracias a esa protección de Colombia.
Thanks to the protection of Colombia, we could leave this cell where we were locked up and move to a safer place for our friends, but not for us.
Segura para ellos, pero insegura para nosotros.
And they were afraid that the Sabine was actually going to come through the roof of my cell to get me out of it, because I knew where I was at.
Entonces,
they moved us so the police couldn't get Josh. Because the moment the police got Josh or me out of there, the riot was over. The prisoners wouldn't have anything to negotiate with, and it wouldn't make sense for them to keep fighting.
The riot dragged on, overnight and into the next day.
Everyone that's in that prison, especially the political people, we're doing everything we can to get the knowledge out of what's going on.
Hello, this is Joshua Holt. It is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This is our second day of the riot. I still have no information on what's going on.
Before, you'd be very, very careful with the things that you say, the things that you publish. You wouldn't ever put videos out or pictures out. I mean, I always take pictures or videos and send them to my family, but that was something very dangerous to do because it was to get into the public. The guards would know that you had a cell phone. Well, now that we're going through a riot, we knew that they were going to turn the whole jail upside down and find everything that they could. So in our minds, it was, we're getting out, we're getting in the news, everything that we can.
Mi nombre es Gabriel Valles. Soy activista en derechos humanos, secuestrado por el gobierno venezolano.
I have asked my government over and over and over to help me. And from what I hear, all they do is they call Venezuela, and Venezuela doesn't want to answer.
Le pedimos a todo el pueblo de Venezuela y América Latina que nos acompañe y alce la voz de protesta porque ya basta de tortura y de violencia.
We are here fighting for freedom.
Helicoide, centro de tortura del Sebin.
That is stuck here in Venezuela just because Venezuela and the United States aren't friends. So I have to live in this. I need the help of my people to come and get me and my wife. Please, I beg of you, with all of my heart.
And word did spread. The timing may have helped. The riot began just days before Venezuela was due to have elections. Opposition leaders protested in the streets at the same time conditions deteriorated inside El Helicoide.
There's nothing that we can do. They don't follow their own laws.
How long have you been in prison?
4 years.
Four years.
And without...
How's your trial going? It doesn't exist.
All the while, the political prisoners continued to argue for their freedom, and the common prisoners asked to be transferred to another facility, one where they believed they would be treated more fairly.
Ellos tienen como un eslogan. Ellos dicen, del Sebin sales muerto o no sales.
They had a slogan, from Sebin, you leave dead or you don't leave. Because there are people who are there for 5 years who are technically free, but they're still prisoners.
Y no los dan libertad.
After fighting with them for a whole day and a half, they were finally given permission to be moved to a new jail. And so everyone was super excited.
Todos esos presos comunes.
The common prisoners are put on a red bus and taken out.
Son subidos o montados en un autobús. Un autobús rojo los tenían afuera.
There were over 70 people that left that day.
Todos iban para allá. Ellos estaban tan...
They were so happy because they thought they were going to be taken out of El Helicoide to be taken to a different jail.
Now we were afraid because we could see the news. We could see that they were covering this, that it was really big headlines there in Venezuela, as well in different countries around the world. And the Venezuelan government actually released some type of news stating that there were people inside of the Sebin that were armed and that they were going to have to take care of it. And this had happened maybe 6 months to a year beforehand, where there was a prison riot. A couple people were shot and killed, And the outcome of that riot was basically the police officers all going in and killing every single person in that prison.
The moment they removed all the common prisoners, Josh and I talked as a couple. This isn't going to come to anything good. But if we keep doing this, what are we achieving? They could separate us. They could send me to a women's prison, and they'd leave you here. I shouldn't have been in that prison. I should have been in a women's prison. The women who were imprisoned in that jail were there for an important reason. But the only reason I was there was because I was his wife.
And that was, you know, our biggest fear was that we were going to be separated. One of the biggest blessings that we had was that we were together.
Our lawyer called us. He said, look, there's an offer for you too. If you quit taking part in the riot, I have an offer for you.
They told us not to worry, that we weren't going to be separated. That was a promise that they were given, and that the only thing that they wanted was for us to basically give ourselves up. And that if we didn't do that, that there would be repercussions. That they would put more charges onto us. And we knew that when I gave myself up, the only American in there, that there was going to be nothing to stop the guards from coming in and taking everyone else down. The riot would stop. And so I remember sitting down with Lorden and Gabel and telling them that, telling them what our lawyers were saying, the news that they had and what we had to do. My wife and I were crying. My wife and I were upset. We were sad. We didn't know what to do. We were confused. But we knew for our family's sake and for our sake that we had to give ourselves up. And most of them understood. I think they all understood, but they were all crying at the same time. They all knew that we had to do what was best for us. It was a really hard decision to make. We gave ourselves up and we weren't separated.
Josh and Tammy still weren't free, though the riot was over. They gave themselves up, walking outside the prison and handing themselves over to the guards. The guards took them to an office, actually just one floor above Gabo's cell, where they would spend the rest of their time in prison. Gabo, Laurent, and most of the other political prisoners would eventually be released, but not that day. The uprising ultimately failed.
And when we walked outside, we saw all of those common prisoners that we thought were taken to a different jail, and they were all handcuffed, kneeling on the ground.
No los llevaron a ningún lugar. No trasladaron a nadie a ningún lugar.
The police didn't take them anywhere. Just 20 or so were taken to another prison. The rest were still prisoners.
Los engañaron.
The police had tricked them. That's what happened.
Eso fue lo que pasó.
Next time on Hope in Darkness.
There have been three or four times when we've been told, he's out, he's getting out, get ready. And we're like, uh-huh. And then our phone just started going nuts.
Hope in Darkness is written and produced by me, Becky Bruce. Additional producing and editing came from Nina Ernest. Sound mixing by Trent Sell. Our executive producer is Cheryl Worsley. Original theme composed by Michael Bonmiller. Additional voice work provided by Rebecca Cressman and Alex Keary. Special thanks to Josh and Tammy Holt and their family for sharing their experiences and story. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Hope Darkness Pod or online at hopedarkness.com. And your feedback is always helpful. Drop us a rating or review wherever you listen. Hope in Darkness is a KSL podcast.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.